Golf Smarter number 167 for February 24, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
A conversation with PGA Tour professional Aaron Oberholzer.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Hi, this is Aaron Oberholzer, PGA Tour player, and you're listening to Golf Smarter. Now here's your host, Fred Green.
That was really cool. Well, he's going to be on the show anyway. I had to ask him to do it, right? Welcome and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. A little business to take care of before we get to today's conversation. Really interesting conversation with Aaron. The Golf Smarter podcast has evolved over the last 3 years from doing just tee tours of specific courses to covering all things golf that have nothing to do with tour statistics. I really believe that there's a ton of unsung heroes in the golf industry that have great stories to share, and I'm determined to bring them to you. But last episode may have been an anomaly. Although I have a son who graduated with a political science degree from a major university, and my wife is a part-time talk show host on a news talk radio station in San Francisco, I am not a political person. When conversation turns to politics, my face glazes over with that look you get when you're peeing in the ocean. You know, take a moment and you can imagine what I mean. It's that look of ecstasy, but a glazed look nonetheless. So please, don't think that just because I did a show about a political topic, that's where we're headed. It's not. And today's episode is proof of that. But as a quick follow-up, since we published our show on the proposed golf tax, lawmakers in California's state capitol have reached an agreement on a budget deal, and the golf tax is not part of the budget fix. Enough said. Our guest today is Aaron Oberholzer, a well-spoken and straight-talking professional athlete. I sat down for a quick conversation with Aaron at the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am Press Conference after they concluded the group exchange. Aaron was there to promote his upcoming appearance. Unfortunately, the week after we spoke, he had to withdraw from the Buick tournament and ended up not playing at Pebble because of problems with his wrists. Golf Channel reported that Oberholzer is still suffering from severe tendonitis in his surgically repaired left wrist, and GolfObserver.com reported on February 16th, he has been able to play and practice through pain, but he requires daily treatment on the wrist. This is a quote from Golf Observer. For Oberholzer, it's sad because he hasn't been healthy enough to play at Pebble since his win in 2006. Now he has soreness in both wrists. Aaron said, "It's frustrating and just not fun to play. I've been playing in pain since May of 2007, but hands take a long time to heal, and we'll get it figured out." But, you know, I'm going to ask a question about our game, not his. During the press conference, a reporter grinded Aaron about a statement he made in college. So when I got my few minutes with him, I tried to turn the tables on him. Aaron, it was interesting. During the press conference, you were talking about how the press doesn't really understand what a professional athlete goes through if they haven't been through it themselves. And you've had success at the professional level, junior level, college level. Does someone who's had your kind of experience in competition, do you understand what the average golfer is going through, kind of pressures they put themselves through?
I have no idea. I would imagine the average golfer, based on all the guys that I've played with, I would imagine the average golfer has a billion thoughts running through their minds over every shot. Do this, do that, keep the right arm or keep the left arm straight, you know, keep your head down. And trying to remember, you know, and bring up information about almost every lesson they've had their entire life. And it's a product of not being able to practice, of most people having real jobs with, you know, that they have to support a family with, and they just don't have the time to put into the game like we do as professionals. And maybe they just weren't blessed with the same talent that I was blessed with. But, you know, I think that the average guy, everybody has a chance to get better. I just think at how much time, you know, they got to ask themselves, how much time do I really have to dedicate to the game if I love it enough to even dedicate any time, and then realize that if they're not able to dedicate that time, we don't want to hear you bitching and complaining about your bad shots. Pretty much. That's how I look at it.
And then they put themselves under a lot of pressure because, like, last round they had their second-best round ever. Exactly. So they think now they're on a roll. This is going to be it forever.
But
you talked about expectations.
Yeah, you can't have those kind of expectations. Each round is in and of itself just that round. It doesn't have anything to do with the next round, and it had nothing to do with the round before unless you make it that way in your mind. So I think that when people try to go out and play, they need to just – don't think about anything really. Just go out and have a good time, man. I mean, you're supposed to be out there enjoying the day and trying to move along quickly and have a good time just hitting the ball and being out in nature. You know, I mean, if you'd rather be somewhere else and you're going to be whining and moaning about hitting the ball here or there or the other place, then go do yard work or something like that, because it's a difficult game. It's a game for a lifetime. They call it that for a reason. And it takes a lifetime to even get anywhere to where you can understand it if you don't play and practice on a regular basis.
Too much pressure on the individual player, on the average player they put on themselves?
Absolutely.
Define pressure for them.
Well, pressure is basically lack of preparation. It's an unprepared athlete, as I like to say. Pressure happens to an unprepared athlete. And, you know, if in the competitive arena, I should preface that, in the competitive arena at a high level, pressure is what happens to the unprepared athlete. However, it can happen to the average golfer only if they think they're in a competition. If they come out here on a Saturday and they play once a month or twice a month and they think they're in a competition, when they don't practice like they're in a competition and they don't train like they're in a competition, then they're not going to play well. If they come out here and just take it for what it is, just a fun day of golf on a Saturday afternoon, I guarantee you they're going to play a lot better golf.
Talk to me about the average golfer going through and doing, say, a golf school versus getting a coach, a regular teacher that you're going to work with on a regular basis.
Well, it depends on what your goals are. Are your goals to really improve your game and get to the highest level that you possibly can? Do you take it that seriously? Do you love it that much? Or is your goal just to go out and not make a fool of yourself and just try to have a good time and move along quickly and you know, not take it so seriously? If you're going to take it very seriously, then getting a coach is probably having a coach and having a goal and having a path. It's probably the right way to go. If you have dreams of competing at an amateur, high amateur level, county stuff, the Palo Alto City, the San Mateo County, the commuters. Do you have goals of that, or do you just want to be a decent player that is probably trying to get anywhere between an 8 and a 15 handicap, which is very respectable, without a doubt. And in that case, I don't think you need much more than maybe a lesson every month, because most people can't retain all the information a teacher gives them in the first place. So if you just get a couple of key swing things to think about and to talk about, then I think and keep fresh in your mind or write down on a card in your bag and keep it in your bag, then I think the game becomes more enjoyable that way. I think when you start talking about getting a coach and being serious, you might be taking a little bit more fun out of the game, to be very honest with you. And then you start taking it a little bit more seriously. Not that it can't be fun. It's still fun for us, but it's a job and a career, and we're trying to put food on the table. Whereas I don't think most people need to go that far. And I think it can be somewhat of a detriment to that player.
You've done some coaching on the college level, right?
I've helped out with the Santa Clara men's team when my coach was there, and I've helped out a little bit with the San Jose State team, not as an assistant coach, but as a former alum, talking to the players and being around the team.
We've had a lot of listeners write in asking about, you know, for their kids or for themselves, younger players, of doing junior golf versus high school golf. Your advice?
Do both. I did both around here. If you love it, if I'm talking to the parents out there, if your son or daughter has a passion for it, and you can't keep them off the range and you can't keep them off the golf course, then encourage it. Encourage it. It's a blast. It's fun. Teach them the right things. Teach them the right attitude to have. Get them some solid fundamentals, grip, posture, alignment, ball position type stuff, and then let them develop his own signature on his swing or her swing. If I'm talking to the player themselves, if you love it and you're taking it seriously as a junior golfer, play. I cannot impress upon young kids enough to play in as many tournaments as their parents will allow them to play, or their financial, you know, whatever their financials might be, their financial situation. Play in as many tournaments as you possibly can. Get the competition under your belt. Have fun with the competition. That'll carry you on for levels and levels and levels. If you want to keep going up the ladder amateur wise and maybe someday become a professional, you cannot play enough tournament golf.
Is one better than the other for getting into college golf?
I think they both help. I think they both look good on the resume. I think if you've had a successful high school career and you're shown to play well in your area, not so much dominate, but basically be a top player in your area in the high school level, you're going to attract D1, D2, and D3 scholarship offers. And if you're a world beater and you're dominating in your area, then you're going to attract a lot of D1. But the AJGA stuff and the NCJGA stuff, all that stuff is going to help the resume just as much, if not more, than your high school career. I would imagine that colleges nowadays are looking more at the tournaments outside of high school because the competition is so much better outside of a small high school field than it is inside it. So one thing or another, I've never played an AJGA event in my life. Never did. I grew up here in Northern California playing NCJGA stuff, and did quite well. I got a scholarship to San Jose State, and I've never regretted it one day in my life. I think that my path is the path that it was meant to go on, and I enjoyed it, and I impress upon all the other kids in this area and everywhere else who ever may be listening to this, wherever they are, to don't get so enamored with the AJGA and having a great AJGA record. That isn't everything. And it's not, I mean, there's a lot of players on the PGA Tour who never played in an AJGA event and have won majors and been successful.
Has making it to the tour and being on the tour on a regular basis been everything you'd hoped it would be? Or are there surprises that you were totally baffled by?
There's some good things. There's some great things. You know, the tour, when you're out here for, I mean, this is my seventh year on the tour. I think when you're out here for a while, there are some things that you love. You know, when I first got on the tour, it was 100%. Oh, my God, I can't. This is unbelievable, phenomenal. But like any other job, I think it starts to wear on you at times, and the travel wears on you, and you can become a little jaded, and your attitude can become a little not so good. Well, you know, and your priorities change as you get older, like you said. I'm married, and I have a child on the way. So golf isn't as important and life-altering as it once was, and as soon as the child comes along, it never will be the same again. Golf will take a back seat, and I will be skipping tournaments to go to recitals and to go to soccer games and or whatever my child wants to do.
You're gonna learn that there are two types of people in the world, people with kids and people who have yet to have kids.
Yes.
Just like you're talking about, you know, riders don't know what it's like to be on the tour.
Yeah.
You're going to be blown away what it's like to be on the tour.
And I've heard that from everybody else who has children, and I agree with them 100%, and I have the kid isn't even here yet, and I can understand what they're talking about to a certain extent. But you never truly understand it until you are a father or a mother. So I'm looking forward to it. And whatever the tour has in store for me over the next however many years I'm able to keep playing the game is fine. No one's ever said that I can't take a sabbatical and then come back, even if I have to go through Q school again. So, I'd be lying to you if it didn't cross my mind, to be very honest with you. I've realized as I've gotten older, there are more important things, and I'd like to see my child grow up.
Absolutely. So when you're on the tour, you finish on a Sunday, you got to jump on a plane, head to the next event. You spend a full week in that location. Can you give us a brief run through of what that week is like?
Sure. Monday's a travel day. Sunday night, Monday's a travel day. Tuesday's a practice round. Wednesday's the pro-am usually. And then Thursday through Sunday you're playing, and you're in a hotel, and you go again. I mean, it's the same. It's like Groundhog Day, man. It's every week. It's the same thing.
It's the same group of guys who are traveling.
Same group of guys that are traveling and playing in the same tournaments week in and week out, and I'll be honest. At times it becomes a bit monotonous, and you have to find ways to spice things up and do things a little differently. And
so then, which night of the week is the most fun? And the answer, the night you win, is not count.
Oh, that doesn't count? I was going to say, Sunday night after you've got the trophy in your hand. Yeah, that's the most fun. I'll be honest, they're all the same. And I try to keep them all the same. I try to stay as consistent as possible. I think that when you start getting your emotions up and down and putting more onus on one night versus another or one day versus another, you're setting yourself up for a fall, in my opinion, emotionally and quite frankly for your game as well. You're setting yourself up for a fall. So to stay as consistent as possible throughout the entire week is important. Is very important. Keep a level head and not get too overly excited about anything.
You played through injuries recently, and then last year we all watched Tiger play in pain.
Yeah.
I mean, as an amateur, I know just a little pain, and my game has totally changed. Yeah. How did he do that?
I have no idea, because his golf swing, the way he loads onto that left knee, for him to do what he did at Torrey Pines last year was pretty remarkable, in my opinion. I think that it's a testament to his ability upstairs. He's the strongest mind we have on the tour, without a doubt.
And he was like that when you competed against him in college as
absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely. He wasn't as disciplined. He was disciplined, but not anywhere near what he is now. And it's a testament to his maturity and to his focus as a player. His confidence in his game and his confidence in his ability to know what he can and can't do, no matter what the circumstance is. It's remarkable what he did at Torrey Pines last year. I'll be honest. No one knew the extent of the injury until after the fact. So I'm thinking, well, he's probably just got a little tweak in there. Boy, that's to play with a stress fracture and a busted ACL, and to play at that level is it's beyond remarkable, to be very honest with you. There aren't words to describe it. You get tired of having to talk about him every once in a while, but this is a new situation and a unique situation and something that he's never had to deal with before. But to see him do it was impressive as a player, from a player.
So he's been gone long enough. Let's bring him back. You want to compete?
Sure, we all want. I do want him back. I mean, I think he brings a level of excitement to the game that no one else does. Phil doesn't do it. Ernie doesn't do it. VJ doesn't do it. You know, there's a different electricity when Tiger's at an event. We can all feel it, and it's the truth. And denying that is you're in denial as a player if you can't acknowledge that. So I think that he brings something different to the game that. That no one has ever brought, even more than Nicklaus, 10 times the Palmer effect in the 60s, in my opinion. I like having him at tournaments. Plus, he's, you know, for a guy who's in his position, he's a fairly down-to-earth guy, and I've known him since his freshman year in college at Stanford, and he's always been good to me, and he's a nice guy. Most importantly, he's a good man. He's a nice guy and a good man.
Hey, best of luck this year. I hope you have a great year. Enjoy yourself at Pebble Beach. Hopefully the weather will be great.
Yeah,
you have a great season.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, if you paid attention, the weather wasn't great. They didn't even get the last day in. And, of course, Aaron didn't make it. But we thank him again for his time. Wish him the best of luck in the future and good health forever. Now, as a podcast listener, you clearly know what awesome information is available to you from so many sources. But I'm also a podcast listener and a podcast evangelist, always doing research on the growth and impact on podcasting. And that's why I thought I'd share a statistic that I found this week in podcastingnews.com from an article in this week's New Scientist detailing a recent psychological study from the State University of New York, SUNY, in Fredonia. The study called "Can Podcasts Replace Professors?" indicates that students who listen to class lectures in podcast form score better when tested on the lecture material than students who heard the lectures in person. Average scores of podcast listeners were 10% higher than the score of students who only heard the test material in the lecture hall. It is worth note that the test score advantage disappeared among podcast listeners who did not take notes while they listened. Those podcast users who did take notes averaged even higher scores by another 6%, which is to say, if you really want to lower your golf scores, maybe you should take notes when you listen to Golf Smarter. Okay. Just a reminder to check out the Golf Smarter blog at golfsmarter.com for information on upcoming interviews. That way you can submit your questions. And, of course, we have a group going on. Golf Smarter Community is at facebook.com, and we're having ongoing conversations on a lot of different topics. We invite you to join the Golf Smarter group at facebook.com. Thanks to Tim Musson of Newark, Nottinghamshire in UK, who sent in today's quote that comes from a list of top 10 smart-ass responses by caddies, and I'm sure that you'll continue to hear these over time. So the golfer complains, "I'd move heaven and earth to break 100 on this course." And the caddy responds with, "Try heaven. You've already moved most of the earth." Now, unless I've secured a new prize to give away next week, one plane versus two plane swing with Chuck Quinton of RotarySwing.com. If you have any comments, quotes, suggestions, or questions, send me an email by clicking on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.